If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away? Proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed? Smiling, he would say, I am a Muslim.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio, in which we try to ask and answer some of the questions related to the Islamic laws based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. But before we embark on our episode, let's take a listen to a short biography. A little bit of background about Ayatollah Khamenei. He was born in 1939. When he began his Hawza studies, it took him 5.5 years to finish the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh. The standard time for studying the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh for an Iranian student that is not raised with the Arabic language is about 10 years. At the age of 18, he starts attending Bahthul Kharij. Bahthul Kharij, he starts it in Mashhad under Sayyid Hadi Milani. For 7 years straight, he was in Qom studying under Ayatollah Burujerdi, Imam Khomeini, the son of Ayatollah Ha'ari, who set up the Hawza in Qom, Sheikh Murtaza Ha'ari, which was one of the top figures in Qom. Then he went back to Mashhad. For 4 years, he studied Kharij under Ayatollah Milani again. Speaking to some of those who knew Ayatollah Khamenei in Iran, when the issue of the ijtihad of Ayatollah Khamenei came up, they said, we testify that he was a mujtahid not now, but in 1337, that's in the Iranian calendar, 1337, that's the first year that he started his Bahthul Kharij. He was teaching also. He had classes, he was teaching makasas, some of the advanced classes in the Hawza, he was teaching that. 5 years before the actual movement started by Imam Khomeini, he was a mujtahid according to that testimony. And when the movement of Imam Khomeini began, he was part of it, he was politically active, but he also was involved with his studies, as we said. Up till 1347, he was actively participating in Bahthul Kharij of Ayatollah Milani in Mashhad. And after he became the supreme leader, a little while after that, because he was requested a lot to start Bahthul Kharij, he started Bahthul Kharij and he's teaching. One can very clearly testify that this man is no doubt one of the most just and adil scholars that would not, for any reason, for his children, for his family, for his personal benefit, for any party's benefit, for anything other than Allah, change his view and make a decision to go against what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has said because of something like that. Back to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Shoaib Javid, our guest speaker. The topic we are dealing with in the previous episodes and this one, and hopefully in the future, is some of the jurisprudential laws related to homes based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. Sheikh Javid, somebody asked, the banks have a method for depositing money which makes it inaccessible to the depositor. It's in fact kept
in one's bank account with a particular method of computation. Is khums applicable to that money?
Well, it depends on whether he is able to withdraw the money or not.
Mm-hmm.
If the bank does not give him access to his account and he is not able to withdraw the money, he is not supposed to pay any khums. But if he, as we see in, for example, in Iran, we deposit money and we are able to withdraw money every day or every month, no matter, it's all up to us. So if you are able to withdraw money, khums should be paid at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm, I see. Is khums, Sheikh Javid, obligatory for the house tenant or the landlord on the money that the tenant deposits with the landlord?
Again, I should say that we discussed this and elaborated on this issue in the very first episode. If the money is from the annual earnings of the tenant, then it is, you know, khums is obligatory for the tenant after the landlord returns it. Unless, of course, he is unable to pay the full rent of the lessor or does not, you know, or maybe the landlord does not accept a lesser amount. Of course, in this case, he does not have to pay khums. And also, if he's not able to, I'm speaking about the tenant. If the tenant is not able to rent a proper house, a suitable one, and in the event that he pays khums to the khums, he will be incapacitated in one way or the other. So again, he is not going to pay khums on the money that he pays to the landlord in order for him to get his house and to live in the house of the landlord.
Mm-hmm. Sheikh Javid, it happens to some workers or some employees, unfortunately, in the world, that some of the factory owners or company and incorporations, employers don't pay their employees. And for several years, sometimes, or several months, it happens that they do not pay their workers or employees their own salaries. Will it be considered as income of the khums year in which they receive it so that they should calculate its khums at the end of that year? Or is it not subject to khums at all?
Well, this money, which is paid later, maybe many months later, would be considered as part of the annual income of the year of receipt. I mean the year in which the employee received the money. And it is, khums should be paid on the excess of this money. For example, you earn money and you get the money from your employer, and then the money is in excess of your need because it's a huge amount of money paid to you after many months, after several months. So the money is over and above your needs. So khums should be paid on the very day in which you are supposed to pay khums.
Mm-hmm, I see. Thank you very much, Sheikh Javid. Let's take a short break and we'll be back and continue our program, Islamic Laws, on IRIB English Radio. Don't go away.
The followers of Ayatollah Khomeini can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khomeini's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Allah, ya Allah, guide me all the way to your Jannah, ya Allah, oh Allah, don't let me go astray, cause I need you.
Back to the program, Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio. With me, Mohammad Jawad, hosting this program. Anshar Chavid, our guest speaker. We're still talking about some of the jurisprudential laws concerning khums based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. Sheikh Chavid, someone has a personal library whose books he used for a while. For several years, he has not used them, but it's likely that he may use them in the future. Does khums apply to the library in the period that he does not use the books? Is there any difference in respect of liability to khums, whether the original purchaser of the books was he himself or his father or anybody else?
Good. Well, if at the time of purchase he was indeed in need of reading those books and using those books as reference, and they are books that he actually that was suitable for him. For example, if there is a great scholar, he needs to have many books in his house to have access to them, even though he may not be using them for many years, but he was in need of the whole volumes because there are more many volumes of the same book. So he was in need of those books. He purchased them. He does not have to pay khums on those books. But if someone buys books that are not, that he is not supposed to have, like he buys books and use them for simply decoration, puts them on the shelves so as to make an impression that he is a man of knowledge, he's a man of reading and books and so on and so forth. Obviously, in such a case, khums should be paid by him because he did not need those books for reading and researching. Now, when it comes to buying, when it comes to purchasing books with money that was gifted by, let's say, by your father, as you said, or by someone else, your friend, based on the principle or on the doctrine of His Eminence Grand Ayatollah Khamenei, there is no khums paid on gifted amount. There is no khums payable on gifted property or whatever comes from someone else as a gift.
Even if they don't mention it's a gift, but they still give it.
Yeah, they give because you did not do any work for that person. He gave it to you as a gift. Khums is not paid on that thing. And of course, even if many years run over that thing, let's say it's a library, it's a few books, volumes of books. So many years pass over the books, you do not have to pay khums on those books.
Sheikh Chavid, you and I are part of this cultural community that we normally study and research.
Of course.
Right?
Yes.
And normally people who research have their personal library.
They do.
The size doesn't really matter. I mean, we are not talking about like big, your huge library.
Yeah.
We are talking about personal use libraries.
Of course.
All right? Like our bookshelf, for example.
Bookshelf.
And in our bookcase, there are a couple of books that we don't use, let's say, on an annual basis, right?
Yes.
Like there are some books that we use daily, and there are some books that we use maybe once in a month.
Yes.
And there are some books that we don't really use like in a year. But they are there for research. Like sometime we refer to those books.
Yes.
Such as reference books,
right?
Right. All right. What about these books? Are these books liable to khums?
I think the same answer applies to this scenario you mentioned. Because you are a researcher and it's very much within your status as a researcher to have books, even though you do not need them. So you potentially need them, maybe in the future, and at any time.
Exactly.
It may happen to you that you might want to use that book. So basically, you bought them to address your needs, to resolve your needs. So Homs is not paid on them, as the answer goes in the book written by His Eminence Grand Ayatollah Khamenei, Ajbibatul Istifta'at.
Thank you very much, Sheikh Shawi. Thank you, my dear listeners, for listening to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio. Until then, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
رحمن رحيم منان كريم سلام عليم ملجا لا إله إلا هو غفار جميل وهاب لطيف تواب سميع بصير لا إله إلا هو وحيد قدير محيي مميت الأبطال.